Greetings and welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. Is it hot in here? I am your captain, Mariah Gossett. With me on the view screen, we have...
Oh, crap. I lost it. Paul Satachit, you know.
Yeah, lost it, Paul Satachit. And Clyde is just in the pattern buffer. He will be right here in just a few moments.
I had it. I was watching the episode today and I go like, that's what I'm going to say. Damn. Like, you know, I wish I could find some Romulan haiku that I could apologize to you guys
with.
You
need five paragraphs. Okay. Tonight we are talking about, finally, new Trek episodes. If you're not watching the live stream, I just did something really silly with my arms. But anyway, tonight we'll be reviewing and discussing the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery Season 5, starting with The Red Directive, which was directed by Olatunde Onsunsami, written by Michelle Paradise, followed by Under the Twin Moons, which was directed by Doug Aronofsky and written by Alan McElroy. But first, just a couple of reminders this evening, ways you can hang out with us even more, share the show. What can they do, Paul?
Hey, maybe you guys could subscribe to our podcast at Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. All links are at StarTrekPod.co. And if you love our content and you wish to support us, or if you hate our content and wish to hate support us,
we love hate support.
consider donating to our Patreon for just $2. How much money is that?
$2. Two Latinum bars, if you will.
Two strips, not bricks, not bricks or bars, but strips of gold pressed Latinum per episode at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Indeed. And Clyde, how can people interact with us tonight in the chat if they're hanging out live?
Well, you can call a friend to call a friend to call a friend, and then maybe someone will know us and they'll have our phone numbers and tell us what you want to think. Or you could just type capital P, capital O, capital D, capital pod in the chat, and we will take a look at your comment, your question, your thought-provoking musing on the episode. And then at that special time, we will ask you to simply type capital H, capital F, capital HF, for your overall thoughts of the episode in which we are discussing at the moment.
Indeed. And I think, guys, it might be time to go a little old school, a little revisit, maybe a view into the past for us to remember that we're working into the future. It's time for some...
Man, that deep V never gets old.
The deep V never gets old. It's time for some hot freaks. Clyde, what did you think of this? Let's go ahead and we'll do episode by episode. So that way, in case people haven't watched the second one yet, we shall keep our spoilers to just the first episode here. What did you think? Episode one.
We've got due track. And I thought it didn't disappoint. I thought this was a great way to jump back in after... what I think we all talked about kind of in the rewatch, a pretty like deep, meaty kind of previous season. This felt like, hey, we're jumping back in. There's some action. I mean, it starts right out of the gate with like Burnham hanging on to the side of a starship while it's trying to go to warp. You've got like a lot of stuff happening. And so that was like, oh, okay. This isn't your slow open with a walk down a corridor in the middle of a starship. This is, we're going to jump right in. And I was along for the ride. And so I think we're just warming up with this episode. You got some introductions of a few new characters, and already you got a dilemma of, do you chase the bad guy? Do you save the people? All in all, I like this first episode quite a bit.
Nice. Paul? Your thoughts?
I feel like we've entered the Chris Pine era of Discovery.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I suggested to the universe that Discovery should shift to in season 5. And finally, the universe has taken my note. You know, like, so yeah, that's what I thought.
It's interesting, Paul. Someone else said that the first episode felt very Star Wars-esque.
I think it's
desert. Anytime we're on a desert planet. I also really enjoyed this episode. I'll have to say I enjoyed it. I think more on my second watch. And I think it's because the first time I watched it was on my laptop, and the second time was on my nice big screen with all the surround sounds and everything. And I think it's because it does feel like a movie. It does feel like you need to see it big, because there's big action sequences, there's big set pieces. And I love it. I see all of the budget they're putting into it. I think VFX looks incredible. There's some fun humor that I feel like is trending higher this season, which I'm also enjoying. And I had a really good time. So yeah, overall, I don't know, like, 4.5 Vulcan salutes out of 5 for me.
Nice. Sure. Okay. Great. Nice.
Yeah. And we did have a message.
Don't worry about it.
You know, I'm always doing that all the time. We did have a message from the Menagerie, which is another bonus point. If you want to come hang with us in the Slack for just $2 per episode on the Patreon, you can let us know what your hot freaks are in our Slack so that we could share them on the podcast. Karen says, really enjoyed it. It's been a really nice dynamic. Rainer adds to the mix. And at the end of the second one, my mom Trekkie friend, who has always watched Disco with me, was ecstatic at the, I was making sure there was no spoilers, was ecstatic at the end with the whole setup. Love that they are pulling from The Chase. Yes, we will talk about that, and some great music cues based on TNG that on a planet that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Okay. Very fun. I'm excited. Okay. Jumping on in, y'all. Have we ever heard of a red directive before?
I couldn't think of so, but I was like, I must be missing something. There's somebody out there who's probably going, yes, of course.
I scoured a lot of the internet and I could only find it in reference to Discovery.
Yeah, I think there is the Prime Directive and the Omega Directive a la Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But I imagine, you know, 900 years, like they could come up with another color or something. Yeah. Another
directive. Oh, yeah.
Chartreuse directive.
Maybe in a book that's perhaps, you know, Clyde, I know you've read quite a few of the novelizations, if you can think about that.
She's going to pull my nerdness out in front of everybody and show it. Yes.
I was just making sure I hadn't missed anything, but it does seem like it's potentially something new here for our 32nd century that we're hanging up with. So what a, like you said, you know, Clyde, we really start in the action. We do a classic start in the middle and we jump back to the dinner party, which I thought was a fun little way to introduce, you know, that Saru is still with Tarina. We've got a potential love interest with Tilly. We got some eyes being made across the bar. Mm-hmm. We have Stamets, who's a little concerned with legacy. They did drop that they've essentially abandoned ever putting a spore drive in another ship in favor for these pathway drives, is what they sort of put together here is the new tech going forward. What do you think about what's going to happen with Stamets this season? It feels like he's setting himself up to have to prove something big this season. Thoughts?
Glad you go.
Sure. I think that, you know, Stamets has been kind of a key part of this really from the beginning, right? And we've seen some evolutions. Yeah, I think if, especially for the final season, you have to put him in a position where when you talk about legacy, what will be his legacy? And this is a pivotal moment. Like if we think about, you mentioned books, if we think about this from a Star Trek canon standpoint, it is very likely that they will write books about Discovery once the show ends. Yeah. Additionally, we know that there are other shows that may take its lead. So what you do with that spore drive is going to be pretty impactful.
Yeah.
So I think they're setting Stamets up. I don't think this will be the end of the spore drive. First of all, it's just way too cool. But the question will be, will it ever be something that they mass produce, or if this will just be something that's very particular to Discovery? I think they're setting him up to be like, I don't want to give too much away, but I'm going to say it. I think they're setting him up to be a little like Soon, right? Mm. So if you think about androids, everyone knows who the godfather of androids are, right?
Right.
We don't really have a godfather of warp drive. Daystrom, yes. But I think we could be setting Stamets up to have that type of legacy when you think about, you know, starship travel.
Well, yeah, I think it's also interesting that, you know, we're kind of setting up that, you know, spoilers to the end of Ep 1, not getting into Ep 2, but it is like the idea that the progenitors have created this technology that no one's been ever interacted with before. It feels ripe for a Stamets interaction when we're talking about tech that no one has ever interacted with before. And I think that'll be really interesting.
I wonder if their tech is how he solves the navigator issue with the spore drive. That it's something that if you think about the kind of what we're ultimately talking about is like DNA and everyone being connected. So if you haven't watched The Chase, it's interesting. It just shows that you've got this race that has seeded the galaxy so that every race, whether it's Klingon or Romulan or Cardassian, that we're all connected. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about it from that standpoint, that type of research could unlock the difference between, you know, Mariah Yu versus a Stamets versus a book being able to navigate the ship through the mycelium network. Oh my goodness, do I feel like a dork?
I mean, but it's interesting because we know that Book doesn't need any genetic modifications to run the ship. So then there is that potential seed of like from our evolution based on the progenitor's design, if we're going to go with that methodology of how the universe came to be, then like that is very interesting to ponder. Anyway, I will ponder. I have some big questions at the end I want to talk to you guys about, because I think this sets up some big questions to ponder philosophically so we can get there. But we do kind of jump right into some action with Locke and Maul. Which is, I was like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Like that's like the vibe I got from their names. But what did y'all think of the introduction to Locke and Maul? And then did y'all notice that when Locke takes off his helmet, that his face like reformates into a hardened face? Did y'all notice that?
I missed that.
He like almost looks like he goes from a hologram face to a hard face. And so my question is, is he actually a hologram?
Probably not.
Something's up. Something's up. His face gets weird.
Yeah. No, I don't know. As far as what I thought of him, I'm a little concerned. You know, I like them individually as as character, not individually, but as like characters, but like as the big bad for season 5, they feel a little like the scale seems a little small to me.
Yeah. And I don't know if they are going to be our big bag or if they're just our antagonists for this first few episodes. Yeah.
That's why I don't exactly understand. Like I, you know, so there you go.
They seem more compelling to me than the Emerald Chain and kind of those introductions.
Than Osyra?
Yeah, like Osyra was interesting, but we didn't get to Osyra for a while. They seem fun. They seem
they definitely still fun. I
mean, like Butch cowboys and yes, exactly. Like these are bandits, and you know, listen, space operas and space westerns. I'm for it, and so they fit the like again. We're talking about a desert planet, right? You know, everything that's going on.
Are they in a galaxy far, far away?
They might be.
They might just be.
I enjoyed them. Again, I agree with you, Sean. Paul, I agree with you.
I think they are fun and I enjoy watching them. Like if they wind up being like the big bad, I'm afraid that my response would be like, oh, that seemed like not like it comes down because like every season there's been an epic threat, right? Like you know, and so this is what our show of Discovery has become, where your expectations are a big bad.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's giving like almost like early Fast and the Furious, where it's like the race between two teams, you know, like to get to the end, and like perhaps a big bad will be revealed at some point. But I think I'm interested to see where it grows, especially we'll talk a little bit about it, a little bit more about it in episode two, just to keep from spoiler territory. But I wanted to get into Captain Rayner, and I cannot decide if this is potentially like what, you know, when we were like, is he sus? Is Rayner sus?
I think he is just like he's boomer as hell.
Right. Like I get that he's supposed to be the opposite, but I have like major questions, and maybe we'll talk more about it in two, but I'll just say some red flags came up for me, and I'm a little suspicious, if you will.
Yeah. No, I feel like I feel like he's a little bit like Shaw, where
a little
where,
you know, misdirect.
Well, I mean, like he's gruff. He spent 30 years pre-burn, you know. I mean, not pre-burn, like, you know, post-burn. Through the burn. Mm-hmm. And like in life was just very different. Like he has burn trauma, you know. And you know, they talk about how Starfleet was different back then. So like I, you know, and I can see why he could be, you know, just more about the mission and less about the people.
It's hard for me to comment without getting too far off track.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about more in two.
Okay. I want to come back to that because I have some thoughts, but I feel like we're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
For this, he's, you know, he's gruff. Like, I like the word. He's gruff. Mm-hmm. He's impulsive. He has a very direct view that may or may not be PC and well thought out.
Oh. And Keen says, hang on. I read a novel about Rayner in the pre-disco era of Starfleet. That's interesting.
Ooh.
I would be interested to get some more details on that. So we have like our trio. So Book is back. Not spoiler alert. We're talking about it. So Book is back. He comes onto the ship. I have to talk about the hallway conversation, which to me was like very like, oh, we're talking about getting like back into the groove of a mission, but the eyes are saying, are we getting back into the groove of each other?
I mean, I look at it this way. How and why you break up is important, right?
And it felt like that didn't need to be a true breakup.
I mean, it was like a big fight. It was a massive fight. Like at the end of the day, he felt really passionate about something that she felt opposite about. And he made some questionable decisions that jeopardized a lot of people.
Right.
Right. Based on that. But this is like somebody who's very corporate being in love with somebody who's an environmentalist. Right. Like
the classic tale of the Exxon CEO and the environmentalist.
Right. And the Greenpeace, you know.
And the Greenpeace protester. Yeah.
And so I think when they come back to it, they're like, well, look, at the end of the day, I really do love you. And it's like, well, I love you. And what you're talking about is the Exxon president who realizes, hey, maybe the way I've been looking at the world hasn't been. They're trying to make amends. And so if those beliefs aren't standing in the way, why not reconcile, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, somebody cheated on somebody or, talked about your mama or anything like that.
Let me give a hypothetical, Clyde. I understand. I said, but try it. So here we go. Let's say that you and I have a disagreement, and let's say we're going to lose all our Patreon for, you know, this can't happen because like it's just growing and growing, but we're gonna lose all our Patreon. I go like, hey, Clyde, like, let's produce, like, you know, let's try to talk to our Patreon people. and you are like going, oh no, we should do this one thing, but there is a risk of killing all our Patreon people. And then I go, no, Mariah, let's vote. And Mariah goes, no, I think we should go with Paul's thing. And then you do it anyway. And you almost kill all our Patreon people. And I'm able to save it. Do you think there's going to be a rift between us?
Well, here's the thing. The question is at the end.
Were y'all in love at the beginning of this?
Right.
I've always been in love with Clyde. I love Paul. Anyway.
But here's the thing. The question, Paul, is would you forgive me if, you know, I didn't kill all the Patreons and I come back and I go, Paul, I shouldn't have done that. I was over eager and passionate and wrong. And I am now trying to make amends. And so I'm out there and I'm hustling and I'm trying to get more patrons. Like if I'm doing that and I come back
rehabbing
like,
all the patrons.
Yeah. I'm in there talking to everybody and I come back and go, Paul, can I come back on the podcast?
No. Like, well, what happens is like you stop talking to me.
Well, no, in this case, it's like we stop talking to each other.
It's mutual, but like, you know, so I don't know.
I mean, maybe, you know, maybe I'm worried that you're just not going to see me the same way.
And per Burnham, I'm going to say to you, Clyde, I don't know how to be around you.
I mean, it's a relatable line.
It's like, you know, I've been a critic of like, you know, of Book and like and Burnham's relationship from the beginning. But this episode was like, yes, this is exactly how it would happen. Like, you know, Burnham's going to be weird about it. And so is Book, because their individual choices like had trillions of people like, you know, and so like, you know. How do you hang out with someone who goes like, hey, I rolled the dice. It's going to be weird.
But here's the other thing. We got to be honest about this, right? Like, that's a real easy stance to take when you're away from somebody and you almost prefer like, I'm not going to be around you. Then you show up and you see like, whew, Sonequa Martin Green. Okay. I'm not really that mad.
Like, and I get it. Like, that's why I feel like this episode is probably my favorite episode for their relationship.
Yeah,
this is the most subtle and like, you know, and real, like just when she's going like, you know, I should have called, like, you know, that you know,
it
like,
felt so good. Real.
I was going like that. I go, yes, that's exactly how it would happen. An avalanche comes at you. You throw your starships into like, you know, the sand.
Into the sand.
And then you go, I should have called.
Here's the thing. It was missing this. It was missing her going. I should have called. Like,
that's right.
That was that hallway scene when she gives him like the up and down, and she's like, I don't know.
In her mind, she's thinking, that man is fine. Like,
when Book and when David Ajala and Wilson Cruz are on screen together, it's too hot to handle. It's too much hotness.
Different show. Different show. Like, you know.
It is. But I saw them on screen together when they embraced, and I was like, ooh, they're attractive.
Anyway. I look, when I see them on screen, I think, I need to shape up my beard a little better. Like, I got to get into it. I gotta make sure I got my beard product right, because they're doing it. Like they're showing me what I need to do. I need to pay more attention.
They're what you call it. They're modeling for you. And like,
yes.
You
know, like,
yes. Speaking of love, I wanted to talk a moment about Tilly's little crush, little situation.
Tilly pulls.
Yes, she pulls, but she doesn't know how she reels the fish in and then doesn't know how to take it off the hook. I was like, oh, Tilly, I have also been there when you're just like, oh, I'm a little tipsy and like I'm into this person, but I don't know what to do next. Oh, just kidding. Bye-bye.
to quote a person I shouldn't quote, as in Jamie Foxx, just blame it on alcohol.
But hi, I'm wondering if this is a preview of someone we might see more in the Academy series, because he seems to be potentially another professor. I need to look up his casting and see if he's like a big CW person, because that
do,
usually
do we know that it takes place in this time frame?
They did just confirm it takes place in this time frame.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so we're in the 32nd century. So they seem to be doing a pretty good job of trying to tee that up a little bit. But I'm just going to say to this guy, though, I got my eyes on you, sir. And if you break Tilly's heart, we ride at dawn.
I'm telling you, I'll come find you.
I hope he breaks Tilly's heart. Because I want to see Killy.
Oh.
Listen, you know how I feel about Killy.
I adore Tilly, but I love Killy.
You know, man. I will say I'm loving her hair this season. They've done some like extra curl on top, and it's given me some good hair inspiration. I'm very excited.
That's right. Love it.
Hair inspiration.
If this is your first time joining the Star Trek Discovery Pod, keep in mind that this is not what we're always like, just mostly every time.
I was like, what are you talking about? Like, we're like this every single time. We are the rambliest of ramblers. Anyway, we get into this desert planet. To me, it was interesting that we are in a metaphorical sense ending where we began, because the first episode of Disco was on a desert planet.
Oh, nice job there, Mariah. Very good.
I was like, I was trying to figure out what desert planet it was, but because it's so far in the future, I was like, is this the planet because they let the water come out? Is this the same one? That would be really cool.
That would be cool.
I could not confirm that though. We get into the marketplace and we come upon a synth named Fred, which I found pretty amusing. Unfortunately, he, you know, gives Maul and Locke exactly what they want, which is getting into the box, and then he pays the price for it. My big question though is, are synths warm? Because when they come in, Burnham's like, he's still warm. They were just here. Are synths warm?
Like, I don't know, but like he's probably like a, what you call it? Let me put it this way. Do you think gray is warm?
I don't know. Is it like hard warm?
Yeah, I would think with the model.
I think
you'd
have to be. Yeah.
I think as you know, you just make it that
way. But Fred is like a Data era.
But you know, but
or lore. I'll give Paul a credit. Could be lore model.
It's like I would say that, like, you know, it is unlikely, like at the very earliest, he would be like at the late Picard season one, right? And so Picard season one, you had
Soji.
Yeah, you had basically synths who could pass as humans and those who choose not to or whatever.
Right.
So those were models post Data. So I would say, like, you know, it could easily be that there were. And there were
computers do get hot when they're running at full capacity.
And I will say, and you know, and this is just me being a little obvious, he was shot a lot of times with
a lot of times.
He was shot
for no reason. Like,
so I could imagine that there might be some heat from, like, you know, a phaser blast or 10.
Mm-hmm. See, you gotta watch that Maul, because he, like, you mess with his woman, he gets like hot, and like he was ready to unload the clip on dude. Just
Locke was not having it.
No.
I thought the desert chase scene was very fun and exciting, although I kept just thinking about them having to film with like a giant fan in their face, and every time they have to turn around, like on fake on these like big projector screens. But I thought it looked really cool. I'm really into Maul and Locke's like ship design and the way that it moves. I think that's like pretty neat. And then we love crashing a starship. We love crashing a starship.
Well, let's think about this. Is this the first time we've crashed a Discovery-esque starship?
No. We crashed into the ice.
Yes. Okay. I'm just saying, because if they haven't done it, they needed to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but yes, there's something
about that's a good question. Did we like the Brady Bunch when it does the split screen? I don't know how I felt about the split screen.
I did not like it.
Not so much.
They've done it before, like in like season one, I think. But it was during this kind of montage-y thing, and I felt it was appropriate then.
Was it the mud scene? Mud.
It might episode? Be like I just remember seeing it before. I have seen it before in Discovery, and I felt like I go like, ooh, stylistic choice. But maybe it's because it took place earlier in the episode, whereas this one that was in the middle of a fairly shot design. like, you know, conventionally shot design. Yeah. And so then you put this edit bit there. I'm like, oh. Anyway, but like, it's all fun forward. So like, you know,
yeah,
it wasn't my favorite, but like,
I wish they had done it. Like if they were going to do it, it's like, if they'd done it, did it a few times, I don't know. Maybe they tried it a few times and it felt overdone, you know,
sure.
I've been in that point in the edit bay. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. And then we end with them coming back in and Saru and Tarina have a sweet, sweet little moment. If you don't know, Maul and Locke do escape.
Oh, man.
Oh, darn it. So now the chase continues, but they have to go and get all the sand out of all the little bits of discovery. But Saru beams up and him and Tarina are engaged.
Woohoo.
So cute.
Are they, or are they just shacking?
Like no, at one point. They need to codify their relationship formally. They're
codifying the relationship.
Formally.
Formally, a.k.a. And then, just ask me to get married? And she goes, that's how some cultures refer to it.
But I love it.
But my favorite bit with them was when they were dancing in the beginning. Yes. And oh my God, Tarina, like it goes, is this a Vulcan joke? Because it's hilarious. It slaps.
I was like, this is both intimidating, funny, and sexy. When she's just like, are you going to tell me or do I have to mind meld? And I was like, I'm going to use that every time I need to get information.
So I thought, like, oh, that's like, if that's, I could see that as a way a Vulcan would make a joke, you know, like, because it was pretty funny. It's well within feasibility. And it's I feel like there were very subtle character moments in this episode where I go, like, oh, you really, really cared about the characters and their relationships.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I was like, oh, rather than focus on trauma, you focused on relationships. And I really thought that was great.
Yeah, and love. There's a lot of like rekindling of love in this one. You're right, Paul. Last season, really the last two seasons, was a lot of trauma.
Is refreshing. I'm excited. I'm glad we got to see like Reese and Owo go down for the first away mission. I loved Burnham and Book for the second one.
But like suckers, they get shot.
I know. It's like, oh no, you're stuck. But that was like a cool little trap. My big question as our transition before we get into episode two is, did they mention where the Romulan ship came from that had the original puzzle box and journal on it?
No.
Not that so that's like a big question for me. It's just like, where did this Romulan ship come from? Because to me, that would be a big question I would want to answer in this, like, figuring out of the puzzle.
I think what happened, if I remember correctly, is like they got a transmission centuries ago, right, from the guy. And they've been trying to find the ship since.
Yeah.
So that's all. If I remember, like, when Tilly finds the message or whatever, you know, when the message comes out. So I don't think that they've established that yet.
Yeah. So at the end of episode one, the key pieces of information we have is that the journal gives some kind of a clue to lead us to the next place we need to go in order to find the progenitor's technology. And if you have not watched The Chase from TNG, it might be a good rewatch just to get some background information about the Romulan scientist that was on board that they found his body and his transmission. And now his journal is in the hands of Maul and Locke, and we must beat them to the next clue. Onward, Sherlock.
As Onward Sherlock, who are you pretending to be? Who are you cosplaying?
Watson.
Does Watson say that?
No, but I just decided they did. It's public IP. You can make them say whatever you want.
That's right. This is, you know,
it's public domain.
That's right.
Can make them say whatever you want. Anything else to kind of discuss within the quadrant of episode one?
I think we're good. I think we're all good.
Right. Yeah, I'm good.
All right, y'all. If you are out for spoilers, this is the time to jump out. We are about episode two. Bye,
later, Nicole. We'll
see you. Thank you for joining us in the chat. We appreciate you. And now it is time for us to get into some chats about episode two. Get on ready for some. It's time for some hot freaks.
You know what? We should do some clips, like call it a hot saru or a hot treatise. So like just looking at each other, boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom. We can make those. That would be fun. Okay, Paul, you go first. What did you think of episode two?
I think it was good enough. I think it kept the fun that was set up in episode one. I felt like I have this belief that whenever you shoot in the woods, you
get a lot of money worth.
you get a certain amount of production value, but but you can't go higher than that. Like, you go like, here it is. Like, like you can't make the woods seem so amazing. Like,
they tried with a lot of magical dust in the air.
Yeah. And like you got some like stone rocks, but like it all just feels like the woods. So like I go like, oh, let's try to save the money here. This is a money saving episode. So given that constraint, I go, okay, well, fine. It was good enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Clyde, your thoughts?
Again, I like the pacing here, right? Like there's some movement, there's some action. It feels like there's some urgency to it. There's things chasing them. I thought that was good. This felt like a bit of a setup episode. Like we're moving the plot along a little bit. There's some things here that are really worth diving into. What's going to happen with Saru? What's going on with Rainer? Like, did we get any huge pieces of this whole progenitor puzzle? Not really.
I disagree. We got a literal piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, but was it huge? Like, I mean, what do we?
The fifth. It was a.
But what do we know? Like
exactly.
What,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
It's a block, but we don't really know anything.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
So yeah, I liked it. I do want to talk about Rainer because I think this is where he got interesting.
Yeah. So my hot freak is I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the pairings. I think were very strong in this episode. I thought all the scene partners worked really well. And to your point from last episode, Paul, I think this one continued to build on the idea of these episodes focusing on relationships, because we have Burnham and Saru's relationship kind of having their big full circle moment. We have, I think, Tilly and Adira having this like scientific relationship and this mentor mentee moment that felt really organic. And then we also have Rainer and a bit of his relationship with the Admiral and how their friendship has evolved at the tail end. So I thought this one was really, I agree in that it was pushing plot forward, but I had a good time. I also love whenever we visit an alien planet. And I was like, ooh, if this is going to be every episode, we're just going to a different planet to find a puzzle piece. I am fucking in. okay. So I thought it was interesting, though, that at the top, we start off with Burnham giving her, it felt like a Sex and the City episode opening to me, because she literally says, I can't help but wonder. And I was like, oh no, it's infiltrated. But the crux of her captain's log is that she's feeling like sometimes the mission isn't enough. And what does that mean for her? So to me, that's a very interesting thing to pose at the top. This early in the season for Burnham as a character, and what that could possibly mean as we go forward. I do want to kind of jump. I mean, the planet is cool. I think it's a good time. I love the security protocols, but I do want to kind of jump in and talk about Rainer.
Yeah, the episode is basically that TNG episode where, like Riker goes down to the planet, Riker, Picard, all those people, and then the drones start trying to kill them. And then, this is where Jody like gets to be acting captain for a bit, but like it's all just like running around in the woods trying to not get shot.
Yeah. I thought it was, so Rainer is a Kelleran.
Arsenal.
When he just appeared in the engineering room and was giving help, the first reaction I had was, I just wish this was Reno.
Mm.
Because to me, Reno would have been that person in that room who would have been like, you know, after surviving on the side of an asteroid for that long, probably would have been the one to have thought of how do we like break this puzzle. To me, it would have been more satisfying if it was Reno in that moment. But then by the time we get to the end, I was like, oh, I see why it had to be him. But it is very interesting that he's like, oh, I've been on 7 red directives. I've been doing this longer than you've been a lot, you know, kind of this big thing. And he's like, I've been monitoring comms. And that was when a big red flag went up for me of, is he actually working with Locke and Maul?
I don't think so, because I think from the way I don't want to say cast, but the way this is all set up.
Is he going to lurk at us?
I don't think so. I think he's, I said this last time. You typically need this wise Pixar owl on your team. Mm. And with Giorgio gone, we lost it. Like the cranky, I've done this, I'm close to retirement, I'm not here to do it, but I'm here to give, to impart this wisdom and experience, because everybody on the Discovery team is brand spanking new. Like they're just young, right? If you think about it, you don't think about him. Who is the oldest, grayest person on the Discovery team?
Stamets. And Saru.
And Saru's leaving. Mm-hmm. Right? And so if Stamets is your old gray hair person, he hasn't been through very much. Yeah. He's
not that old. Reno and now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to your point, Reno was stuck on the side of an asteroid. Reno is your old cranky engineer, right? She's your Scotty, your Geordi, your like that's where she's at.
To go with your point, Clyde, like I agree with you. Like, and going off what you just said, like maybe that's why season 4 didn't pop for me, because there was no Giorgio character. Uh-huh. There was no, everyone was like a little too simpatico, and there wasn't that little bit of like, you know, sand to make friction. The pearl. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I hear you. I think you're onto something.
Because Giorgio used to always push Burnham in a way of like, you're too safe.
You have to think like your enemies. She often used to say that all the time, which is something that Rayner said a lot this episode.
Yeah, right. And everybody loves Burnham so much that they're kind of in line with, like, if Burnham goes, hey, let's do it. Mm-hmm. For the most part, they're right there. And even in this episode, Saru is like questioning her a little bit, but they still go. He's going to introduce this person that is going to help her think outside the box. Question. And now, because I think the interesting thing about it is she's largely been that person too, who's ever sat in the captain's seat. Mm-hmm. Right. Sure, and now that she's in it, she needs someone like that, kind of an old gray hair, wise, you know, experience, someone who's been on 7 red directives. I think they've introduced him. And it seemed my only kind of nit to pick is Saru leaving and him joining the crew seemed obvious from scene 1. Like it just seemed like, I was like, oh, I know where we're going almost immediately. It was like, oh, what are we going to do with him? He's going to end up on Discovery. That's what you're going to do. Can we get there a little faster than this? And so I'm for it, but I did think it was obvious.
Yeah, I think I was like in episode 1 was very like, oh, this is either going to be someone who twists and becomes our big bad, or by the end of this episode, I went, oh, you are the new number 1. You're the pusher on the other side of this. I did really like how they seeded through the episode where you had Saru kind of remind Burnham of the second chance that she was given coming aboard the Discovery. And then we get that like full circle second chance moment at the end. I thought it was nice, neat, tidy writing. Good job, writers. I see tidy what writing. You did. Tidy writing. I want to talk a little bit about the big reveal that Book knows Maul, and Maul is the daughter of Book's mentor. I thought that was quite the reveal.
Love it. Yeah. Loved it.
I'm excited to see where that goes, because I thought I really enjoyed watching Book as interrogator. I liked seeing him work with Stamets. I enjoy the like Book, Stamets, and Culber little trio, because I think they're all so different, but yet so similar in that they're kind of a little stubborn in their ways, but ultimately have good hearts, and they're like different parts of like a full person in a lot of ways. So I enjoy their seasons together. That's really interesting.
I think it's going to be interesting, to your point, with that plot twist. The question becomes, by the end of the season, does Locke end up as part of the Discovery crew? Because
Locke or Maul?
Locke, right?
Locke.
No, or Maul. Maul. Sorry, Maul.
Darth or Star Trek?
Yeah.
Bad wig Maul. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I think if we're talking about Cleveland Booker's daughter and that relationship to Book, it brings in this whole idea of she's a good kid who lacks purpose, but is really, really talented. And with the little, you know, reformation, she's going to be an amazing, like, I wonder if we get that. I'm just kind of curious. I'm not necessarily making a prediction yet, but I can see how it could turn from bad guy to crew member.
Because she definitely gives the vibe of like Locke is way more into her than she is to him. Like I got that vibe pretty right away. And so it would be interesting to see if she ultimately splits from him. And that's what like drives him to be our big, big bad of the season, you know, where he's the one who's like, I'm going to use the device to take down everyone because now I am sad. I'm a sad man with a broken heart.
I like that. I like that. Right, Mariah. He's thirsty. He's crazy thirsty.
Yeah. When he's just like, what do you say, babe? Why don't we just get out of here and live long into the stars in a holodeck for two? And she's like, no, we're going to go get the big prize. Like she's not interested in whatever happy little life that he is thinking of. She's like, I'm ready for something bigger than all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like he wants more than this provincial town.
She is giving Bell. Jay asked, Locke isn't Cleveland Booker. I would hope not, because there in the preview, not as a big spoiler, there's scenes of them kissing. So that would be a little weird. If that was, her father. I'm very interested in Locke and Maul's like little backstory. The other thing I wanted to like a bigger philosophical question for us is, what do you all think of the idea of the progenitors in general? The idea, and this could just be like, it's kind of a weirdly perfect storm as I just started reading Stephen Hawking's A Brief Explanation of Big Questions. I don't know if you've read that book, but it's all of the big questions of like, how did we get here? Is there a God? And like kind of his scientific perspective of these questions. And it's very interesting because there's a lot of ways to, because he's a scientist, interpret the information that he's giving you. But ultimately his belief is that, and he explains in much more elegant ways than I'm about to, the idea that the universe can literally actually have come from nothing to then have the Big Bang. And I'm skipping a lot of the steps of the explanation because he talks about atoms and anyway, all of these things. And so I think it's interesting that, you know, being a sci-fi show, that Star Trek has decided within this particular canon that there is this group of people that essentially like they say at the top of, or at the end of Ep 1, like in thousands of years ago, they would have been considered gods, right? So it's like this idea of created, like intentional creation, created society versus evolution in the true scientific sense.
So would you mean like, you know, when the founders created the Jem'Hadar? They view them as gods. And, you know, like, you know, it's only our like cultural standard that gods have to be all powerful.
You also bring up a good point. And largely because if you go back and watch The Chase, the person who played the progenitor in that episode also played the founder. So that's interesting. But I think we see this in sci-fi all the time, that there is this race of people who become so technologically advanced that they almost become extinct or they extend or something where it's like, because they're so advanced, they have this question about legacy. What do we do with the universe around us? And it's all about like, do they leave something for people? Do they leave technology behind? Do they prevent technology from being used because people are so young? And I think here what you have is you have this idea of, again, this race that quite possibly was alone in the universe who got so advanced. They saw their end coming and said, what do we do? We're going to seed this and see if we can basically procreate. I think in some sense, it's this beautiful idea that is very Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And that's because what's amazing to me is if we think about Trek from whether it's TOS or TNG or whatever, Trek has always had this idea of like, hey, we can all get along. But referencing the fact that at that time, it's a reflection of the fact that we are so divided. And here we are in 2024, and it feels like we are the most divided that we've ever been. And yet Trek is saying, hey, we're going to call back to the fact that at the end of the day, think of us as all part of the same race.
Right.
And when you think about a Klingon coming from the same DNA pool of a Cardassian, if that can be true, stop fighting with that dude over there who voted differently from you.
Yeah, it is an interesting like metaphor to seek for this season, right? To use the progenitors and the idea of like, you know, on Earth in human evolution, right? Like we all came from the cradle of society. We all came from the same place in the world. And then we all just like spread out and variations occurred based on where your people kind of plopped themselves down once we became agricultural societies. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that it like makes sense on a planetary, I don't know. It's like, it does seem like such an act of arrogance to be like, we must survive, you know, or like to not trust that a civilization could eventually evolve without you as well. Like it almost feels a little colonial in some ways as like a larger concept of like, we must place ourselves everywhere in order for ourselves to survive. Like, anyway, there's a lot of ways.
That's literally how like evolution works, right?
Right. But it's like, it's interesting the idea, but to me it feels different if it's like we all came from the same ooze in the ground versus like someone who's intentionally placing their existence elsewhere. It's things to ponder. I'm not saying I know the answer. I'm saying it's things to ponder.
I'm a big believer that if I could clone myself and have a whole bunch of Pauls out there in the world would be a slightly better place.
Man, if I could clone myself, I'd get so much work done. It would be incredible. See,
you're thinking about you. I'm thinking about the world.
Like a clone of Clyde means I get to sleep more than I do now.
No,
we can trade days. We can trade days.
Yes, me.
You alternate days.
Oh wow, you're gonna really like indenture your clone. Not cool, Clyde. Not cool. This is not. You guys are really just do better, both of you.
You know, it's interesting.
We are progenitors.
This is a big like theme in Rick and Morty in the later seasons.
Sure.
Of a clone who's. Like, are you the clone or are they the prime? Clone? Yes. Which one of you are the clone?
Prime exists?
And can you prove it? Yeah.
But you know, like, well, we can all be, just because I may be not prime, Paul, I am. But like, you know, like, it doesn't make me better than like, the you know, than Paul number 7.
Okay. How about this, Paul?
Yep.
If I had a clone, we both would get to sleep more because we're only doing half of the work that this Clyde is currently doing.
Wow. So if you had an extra you, you would only do the same amount of work that you do. Not cool. Your kid deserves more. Your family deserves more. The world deserves more, Clyde. Come on now. Be better.
All right. I'm not going to win this conversation. I'm out.
All right. To get us back on slightly on track, I wanted to talk about, I thought the moment between Saru and Burnham in Saru's quarters at the end was very lovely and was such a beautiful parallel to his Vihari moment. And we also got to see Saru do his little darty thing again this episode, which is very exciting. We also got fast running Saru. We really got the Saru hits this episode.
We got action Saru. We got the full-on action figure Saru.
Yeah,
with the kung fu grip and everything. He hit everything. It was great.
He came with all the accessories.
Yeah, so I mean, if you think about it, you got the quills, you got the running, you got some wisdom, you got a little romance,
you got the vision.
Got the vision. I know when he uses the eyeballs. Okay, what did y'all think of the five stanza poem to get to the puzzle piece? Like, it felt very Indiana Jones, and I was pretty into it.
Yeah, I mean,
like everyone knows that like Romulan haikus are in five verses, and so if Locke and Maul don't know that, they deserve to go to visit. They deserve to go to visit. I mean, come on, guys, come on. Basic Romulan like limericks.
To your point, Mariah, so if this is the final, and we know this is the final season, if you're going to give us an Indiana Jones-esque escape room where each week we have clues and we have to solve the clues in order to get the next clue, as long as they're good, they've got to be good.
So far, they've been good.
You got to keep it up. It's hard sometimes to keep it up. But this could be really fun. So I was for it. I was like, oh man, that's the piece. Because again, to your point, the thing that makes Indiana Jones so cool is that he knows that one thing that everybody else misses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And that's what makes it fun. Yeah.
I think that's what I like about this season. You know, there was a TED talk where J.J. Abrams like talked about the puzzle box, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, I feel like Michelle Paradise must have gotten,
like, okay, I'm gonna make a literal puzzle box.
Like we need to be like more like Abrams and do the puzzle box thing. And she goes, okay, how about this? How about a literal puzzle box? And so my fear is that like you will not be able, or Michelle and the Discovery writing crew will not be able to escalate enough so that, you know, that you go like, oh, it was worth the ride. That's my fear. But I always fear when you do puzzle boxes like this, like, you know, like Battlestar Galactica, you know, they wrote themselves into a corner. Lost, they wrote themselves in a corner where they go like, okay, now we have to land this. How do we land? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, you know, so my hope is that they connect it back to what I want, because I gave two notes. Be more fun and bring back Lorca. And if Lorca is back in the Mithila network, boom, big bad, full circle. Let's do that. Let's make that happen.
I guess here's the thing. You mentioned, you know, BSG and Lost not landing it. For what it's worth, though, the ride for both of those shows was absolutely incredible. Like, I'm not going to let an unfulfilled ending change the fact that, like, the ride was amazing. So if you're giving me that type of ride in Discovery, but the last episode is a little like, womp womp, I might go with it.
Like, I don't know, like, I feel that like I put my trust, like, you know, here's the show that like lands well, Breaking Bad. You know, Breaking Bad lands well because, like, you know, like because they knew where they were going. Like,
was that a puzzle box?
Well, I mean, like, you go like, how far can this, how much more can this go? But if you keep on asking questions, there's a part of me that goes like, oh, you're just sustaining you. You know, like, mysteries are only mysteries when there is an answer, not when there is a question, right? When just a question. Because I, you know, like, you can ask a 4-year-old, they keep asking a bunch of questions. And
I think that the one difference with this is that it's not just a question. and you're building it on canon, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I think that there's a, when you think about whether it's TNG or even some of the things that we've seen in like a Picard where the Romulans have a different relationship with the Federation, I think you have an interest, like I think there is an answer. I'm hoping, I don't know, but I'm hoping that this team has come to this with the answer in mind and are working the puzzles back from that
answer. Me too, brother. If I were to be really cruel, if I was really to be cruel and then go like, oh, well, like that progenitor technology, you know, to make living things, like, I don't know. It was a big deal to this guy who's dead 800 years ago, but we're 900 years in the future now. We make matter do anything we want. You know,
yeah, maybe like, at the end they get to the end and it's just obsolete tech.
Yeah.
It's like finding a first generation iPod in the
exactly. Like it's literally possible because like I don't, you know, like because like the Dominion has done this, like, you know, it's actually not that hard to create life.
Okay. Crazy Mariah prediction time.
Okay. Yeah.
Discovery finds the technology, and in order to keep it out of anybody else's hands, they have to go 900 years into the future
more in the future. That's right.
To transport it out of anyone's hands, and this is how we get Discovery.
No.
8,000.
Paul, addendum to Mariah, like, you know. Okay. What happens is they go so far in the future that time
to the past
back, and they are the progenitors.
Whoa.
Oh, boom.
That was a good one. I was going to go somewhere different and go, in order to keep it out of the hands, they have to go 900 years in the past.
Oh, and they're back
where they start, and they go back.
And they put it on that spaceship to then float into space for the next 800 years.
So, yeah, no, it all works or doesn't. Like, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm watching it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like I'm not watching it. I'm watching with hope. You know, I can be afraid. I can be afraid. You know, I've been hurt
before. A little fear is good for everybody.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really enjoyed these first two episodes. I'm excited for the next batch. Next week we are diving into Janai. We're going over to Trill, which I'm excited about. I enjoyed the Trill Planet episode last time. Anything else y'all wish to talk about for this opener?
No, but I think we did a good job of discussing how we feel about it.
I would just say I'm hoping that we get a little bit more ensemble.
Yeah.
Right now it's very Burnham heavy. Like, you know, we haven't, like, to your point, Owo had one scene where in that scene she basically got frozen into jello placed into jello.
Okay. And what about poor Reese? Like, he's barely poor on Reese. Screen anyway, and then boom, he gets shot, frozen. He's not going another way mission. That's it for him. He's benched. At least Owo had just, like, you know, the had that big MMA fight like in 4, like, you know, she's you know, gone. Back on the bridge.
I'm hoping we get some ensembles because there's a lot of things. There's a lot of people that you can do things with. Whether it's Reno, I'm hoping that maybe we get a little Adira with the Trill Planet.
Yeah, I'm assuming we're gonna see Gray next episode.
Yeah, there's a lot we could do here, so I'm excited.
Indeed. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're here in the live stream, thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to the audio episode, we also appreciate you. Please join us over at the Patreon if you can. We're having a good time over in the chat, so you can leave us a message in the menagerie. You can join us for some watch-alongs, chat about what you thought about this episode. You can also find us on Twitter and on Instagram at Star Trek Pod. Do y'all have anything to plug or promote?
I got nada.
I would say we really are having a good time in the Slack channel. So again, especially for you, our audio only listeners, come on over for $2 an episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Great opportunity. Drop us a note and message from the menagerie so that you can participate in your theories and your thoughts and all of those things. So come on over to the Patreon and hang out with us. We're having a good time.
Indeed. And my final question to you all is, they put it up on the Star Trek social media. Who would you want to go on an away mission with? Mine was Mariner.
Mariner. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Huh. Who would, like, on an away mission? That's like what are the parameters? Because it depends.
Well, you, so the thing they did on social is you said who you wanted to go with, and then they gave you a mission.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, I can tell you what the mission was that they gave me. Hang on. It was, drum roll as the Twitter loads, is, we've lost contact with a pirate starship in the vicinity of an L-class moon. Your away team's orders are to deliver medical supplies and matter synthesizers to a nearby settlement and report back. End transmission.
I mean, I'm trying not to be that guy.
Be that guy.
But part of me would want to go on a mission with B'Elanna Torres.
Ooh. B'Elanna Torres. Interesting. I mean, why B'Elanna?
She's smart. She can fight. And she's a complete smoke show. So, yes.
All solid reasons.
Sign me up.
Awesome.
She can protect you. She can science her way out of anything. And if you're stranded, like, and you need to keep each other warm, just saying. This is the total package.
Total package. Paul?
I'm really into Tendi.
Yeah! A Tendi really mission would be fun.
I'm really into Tendi.
Also but, smart. Also can fight.
If I had mm-hmm. to really choose, it would be those three Orions in the Enterprise episode that take over the... Because, but you say crew members, so, but like, you know, like one of those pheromone Orions. That's what I would want.
All right. And on that note, we'll see you all next time. Live long and prosper. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.